Welcome to This Is Money podcast. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me and editor Simon Lambert today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And coming up, we go crypto crazy, taking a look at some of the real life winners and losers from Bitcoin, explore some of the lesser known cryptocurrencies, as well as some of the other ways to get on the crypto investing train. Crypto mining, anyone? Also today, could you be a property guardian and live for next to nothing? The savings accounts that still beat inflation? Yes, there are some around. And it's all Greek to me. Let's play financial lingo bingo of sorts. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, we've spoken a fair bit about Bitcoin recently. Not a surprise. It is one of the most searched money issues on the web at the moment. But we don't want to go into the whys and the wherefores. We've done that. We've done the crystal ball gazing. We want to look at the real people, the winners and the losers, because there will be some, of the Bitcoin craze. Because Lee, you mentioned one of those a couple of weeks ago. Does he feature in George's article?
Yes, this is the person that I spoke about on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. And actually, when I mentioned him on the podcast, I was messaging him on Twitter saying, do you fancy being part of a story for us? Because I think there's always this chat around Bitcoin. People have invested but have never taken any money out of it and actually banked cash profits and done anything with it. He was saying otherwise, so I convinced him to be part of the story. I mean, as you say, there's always going to be winners and losers from this. And from the cryptocurrency point of view, starting with the losers, there's people that have obviously been scammed in the past because there's been a lot of shonky wallets and different scams and elaborate things out there that have tripped people out of their money and got burnt. I've had people that might have invested at end of 2017-18 surge, you know, at $20,000 a coin, and then it sort of dipped away to $3,000-$4,000 for quite a long time until its recent recovery, and people might have needed access to that money and might have lost money that way. Other people, and it's predicted that something like a fifth of all Bitcoin is actually lost on hard drives and things that have been, you know, super encrypted and are really difficult to uncover. So we've got someone in our story that thinks he has around about £400 of Bitcoin mined somewhere from an old computer hard drive from a very, very long time ago and can't find it. But then you get extreme versions. So there's this person in this story who thinks he's got something like £210 million worth of Bitcoin somewhere in a landfill site in Newport from mining it from 2013 and chucking the computer out and not being able to reaccess that money. So they're some of the losers from the cryptocurrency world. And the winners probably are a bit more few and far between. I think that is a fair enough assessment. But it depends what your measure of a winner or what success is. Now, the person featured in our article, Chris, is a very sensible chap. And that's why I wanted to sort of highlight his story. And he actually got interested in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency back in 2015. And he actually was writing a paper for a client looking into it. And he started to read about the blockchain and all those kind of things. And he decided that actually he wanted to put a couple of £1,000 into it. So he found a way to do so. Now, the reason why I say he found a way to do so is because it was a bit trickier back then. This is when Bitcoin was still quite niche. It was still in its infancy. It was very difficult to find reputable wallets and websites and places to put the money. It's a little bit easier now. There's more mainstream places where you can do that. So he did it. It was obviously a risk, but he felt confident after doing a lot of research. And this is where I really point this out now. He did research. He looked into it. He read about it. He really studied it. And he decided that he wanted to put the money in. He's returned 3,650% on his Bitcoin. And over that time, he has been overpaying on his mortgage. And he bought a brand new car with the money. And he's still got skin in the game. He's still got money in there because I guess there's that kind of trade-off of you want to take some of the money, the profits that you've made, and do things like buy a car, overpay the mortgage. But then there's also that worry of taking it out and it does race to the moon and the price of Bitcoin goes absolutely even more through the roof than it has recently, because we've seen it go over $40,000 a coin. This week, we've seen it dip 10%. So it's lost a big chunk of value because of comments from Janet Yellen, who's likely to be running the US Treasury, saying that Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies fund illegal activity. That's put a massive wobble back into the price of Bitcoin, but it's still way up than it was a couple of months ago. the thing about Chris and what I really like about Chris is that he talks about things like capital gains tax. You know, he's fully aware of you can't just take out huge chunks of cash. You've got to do all these things sensibly. But the most sensible thing he'd done, I love this quote that he says in here. Basically, he wanted to explain that not everyone who has invested in cryptocurrency has gone out, you know, bought a sports car, lives on private islands, all that kind of stuff. His car that he bought was a Skoda Octavia, which I love. And his quote is, "Bitcoin, Lamborghini is all about speed and smiles, but I was all about boot space and miles."
Simon, it's a really good point that Lee makes there about Chris. And I wouldn't say he's a boring cryptocurrency investor, but he is sensible and he knows his stuff, because you are inevitably going to get articles about people who've just chanced it. You know, they put a couple of hundred quid on and now they're in the Lamborghinis kind of thing. And that can encourage irresponsible investing. But it is all about doing your homework, isn't it, Simon? Whatever you're investing in.
It is. And this kind of blue sky thinking is not completely unreasonable. It's just you need to make sure that you're doing it in a sensible way that is a small part of your portfolio, and that if things go down the tubes, you're not going to unduly suffer and lose all of your savings. Or if you do, that you're entirely happy with that. Now, I have a friend who owns slightly less than one Bitcoin. It galls him that he doesn't own quite one whole Bitcoin. And he has done since... Since the last peak. He got in near the last peak, and unfortunately the price crashed after that, and he spent a long period of time underwater. He's now up substantially. The kind of gains that in any normal world or normal scenario would look very, very handsome. He's, you know, trebled his money, quadrupled his money. I'm not quite sure what it is, but it's between trebled and quadrupled. That's a big, big gain on any investment, particularly over what we're talking about here, which is a three to four year period. He has no intention of selling out. He has every intention of holding on. He's absolutely convinced that Bitcoin is the future of money, and it's going to the moon, and that he's going to hold on, and that he's going to make a load more money out of this, and that he's going to be right. And I don't even know whether it's actually about the money or whether it's now about the conviction or whatever. Now, you could say that he's way too emotionally invested in this subject, but he's also perfectly happy to say that, look, if it goes all the way back down, I don't care. I'm fine. I'll deal with that. You know, I didn't have much money in the first place, and I'll go back to not having much money. Yeah, it'll crush the hopes and dreams, you know, of getting rich, which is pretty painful for anyone. But, you know, I worry less about the fact that he has an inordinate percentage of his overall wealth put into Bitcoin than I would do about many other people, because he's always been totally open about the, yeah, I could just lose my money kind of thing. It's if that's a real problem for you and you're going to really suffer emotionally, and you're going to make rash and bad decisions off the back of it. Now, relating slightly to what I just said there, you know, there's another quote from Chris here in this article. He says, talking about holding on to his Bitcoin, he said, "Secondly, the benefit of me doing so is against a fixed amount, namely that of my mortgage interest rate. I'd much rather ride out this Bitcoin roller coaster to see if it does indeed go to the moon. In my eyes, the benefits of keeping my Bitcoin as Bitcoin is better than converting it to pounds and paying off a paltry fixed 1% on my mortgage." And that's the other thing you've got to think about with these kind of blue sky bets. Is there blue sky bets, but what is it that it's going up against? Because yeah, you could just pay off a chunk of your mortgage, but what the interest rate on that is pretty small. The benefit of having paid off a chunk of your mortgage is also quite big, but the interest you're being charged on that money is relatively small. Inflation is currently below 1%, so there is a real interest rate, but inflation is probably going to go back above 1%, and at which point, and if your wages go up by more than 1% as well, which is the more important thing, then effectively the money you've borrowed is free. You're not really paying a real interest rate. An investment trust I wrote about this week, Ruffer, which is a protective investment trust. Its main aim is to not lose investors' money and then make a positive return. It put 3% of the trust into a Bitcoin position in December. That's pretty unusual for a protective investment trust, but it does some fairly unusual things in order to do this aim of protecting people's money. And in its most recent annual report, which landed in my inbox earlier this week, the manager, Hamish McInnes, makes the point that this is a small part of the portfolio. Actually, it's done very well since they invested in it. And they've made a handsome profit. But even if it falls all the way back down, even if it does really badly and falls all the way back down to zero, then at the end of the day, it's only a relatively small part of the portfolio. And I'll just read out the bit from his note here. He said, "Our rationale has been well publicized, but briefly, we have a history of using unconventional protections in our portfolio. This is another example, a small allocation to an idiosyncratic asset class, which we think brings something significantly different to the portfolio. Due to zero interest rates, the investment world is desperate for new safe havens and uncorrelated assets. We think we're relatively early to this, at the foothills of a long trend of institutional adoption and financialization of Bitcoin. Think of Bitcoin's bad reputation as a risk premium. As we move through the process of normalization, regulation, institutionalization, the compression of this premium can have a dramatic effect on the price. If we're wrong, Bitcoin will return to the shadows and we will lose money. This explains why we have kept the position size small but meaningful." Small but meaningful, that's the key thing there. And also this idea that we're still in the foothills. And that's what lies behind the making a blue sky bet on Bitcoin and holding some, is that actually, although when you look back at that chart, it looks like we are way, 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 way up the top of the mountain. And, you know, it's a bubbly, 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 bubbly chart, the old Bitcoin chart. The argument is that this is going to see more widespread adoption. At the moment, it is still only a tiny niche thing. For all, it garners an outsized number of column inches and headlines for something that is actually relatively small and only a very small number of people hold. And that if it becomes more widespread in its adoption and more of the big institutions and regulation, all these other things start getting involved, then we're in the foothills. I don't know. I've got a bit of Bitcoin. We talked about this before. I bought some just as kind of an insurance policy against my mate being right and him getting rich. So like an insurance policy. And I think it's worth noting this on some of this kind of FOMO stuff, you know, whether it's Bitcoin or Tesla shares or Zoom or any of these bandwagons that are quite clearly bandwagons. It's very easy to take the cynical, sensible view that this is just a bandwagon. It's a bubble and a bandwagon. It's rolling past, and you know, just let them go on by. Stick to your knitting. Stick to the sensible stuff, which is generally the view that I must admit I have taken through my life. My thinking has changed a little bit on this, and it's like, if you have got a small amount of money that you can stick on that bandwagon, maybe you should just do so. Because if it's not going to make a painful material difference to your wealth if you lose it all, then it might be worth making that blue sky bet. Because, you know, just because something sounds stupid does not mean that the world will not adopt it in its masses and the price will not continue to go up. That, you know, there are many, many things that have continued to go up in value and surprised sensible people who've gone, this is complete madness. You've just got to be aware that they can come crashing back down to earth quite rapidly.
Indeed. But Lee, Bitcoin is not the only cryptocurrency in town. So could we blue sky bet thinking on something that's perhaps a little bit more niche? So what do we need to know, Lee? Just to sound, you know, like we're in the know with our family get-togethers on Zoom and all that, you know. No, Bitcoin's not the one. You want to know about this one. Go on, Lee.
Well, to be fair, I would say that a couple of other coins have gone kind of hand in hand with Bitcoin. Bitcoin does dominate all of the headlines. And I think when you see headlines, it's like it says Bitcoin and it sort of almost clubs all the other ones in with Bitcoin, although they do vary quite a lot. And I think that the second most popular one and the one that people are probably most familiar with is Ethereum. So Ethereum has seen the price rise at the same rate as Bitcoin in recent weeks. It's almost like goes hand in hand. And then you have more sort of niche coins that I think what people like to think or like to try and do is you go, as you just say, everyone's heard of Bitcoin, who's going to you know, that's done. That's at $40,000, $30,000 a coin. You know, I'm not getting in at this point. It's not going any higher. What are the little niche ones I can get into, involved in? The issue with that, Georgie, is it's almost like pinning a tail on a donkey, almost. Like, who knows which one is going to race higher? Who knows which one's just going to fold and disappear and you're going to lose your money? That's why it's a bit of a Wild West, all of these coins. So first of all, I would say, you know, any coin that you're interested in getting involved in, you need to have a look at all of the information. Like you were going to invest in a company, you'd look through like the prospectus and this, that, and the other. You want to make sure that you're doing all of your homework and all of your research and make sure you're getting it from a variety of sources and get as much information about it as you can. And again, I'll go back to the ease of how you can do this now. Something like Coinbase has dozens of coins that you can get involved in. Some of them are priced incredibly low in compared to Bitcoin, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the only way is up, because these coins can come and go. We had a story last week, so these prices might be a little bit different now, but over the, let's just give you a sort of indication. Over the last year, there is a coin called HEX, and that has gone up 11,450% in a year. Of course, that's from an incredibly low base. And you know, it's one of those things where it's almost like momentum, a bit like Bitcoin. It's just momentum. People go, oh, I should really get some money into Bitcoin. Maybe not even necessarily knowing what it is, what it does, what practical uses are for it. It's that FOMO that Simon was mentioning there. Now, HEX is a blockchain-based version of a type of fixed-term bond, which immediately makes me go, yeah, I'm not sure, you know. And then you have to go further than that and start looking at it. I mean, there's other examples in this story. Something called Kusama, 5,400% rise. Celsius, 3,555% ride. Band Protocol, 3,469% ride. And something called Yearn.Finance, 2,950% rise. What that indicates to me is that that's a lot of different coins to get your head around. If you can't get your head around Bitcoin and Ethereum to start with, I would be kind of nervous to get involved in any other coin. And it's all about doing your due diligence and your homework and figuring out if you've got a little bit of money that perhaps you're winning. It's almost like a gamble, Georgie. If you're willing to gamble, if you're willing to lose that stake and it's not a life-changing sum of money, you know, it's up to you. Perhaps go for it. Should be a very, very, very small percentage of your portfolio, though.
Lee, just, it might be a daft question, but how do you just, like, make a crypto? I mean, can we do a this is money cryptocurrency and sort of start trading it? And no?
It's funny you say that, Georgie, because back in the day when this was all kicking off, Bitcoin, when we first started writing about it, I'm not going to say we were like really, really early adopters of writing this. I'm talking about 2016, 2017 time. I suggested to a one Mr. Lambert that we should start a Timcoin. And Timcoin could have raced to the moon, Simon. It could have done. We could have set it up.
Where is
could
it?
Have had that coin going. Could have sold it to our podcast listeners, sold it to our readers, and people would have bought it. But how you set a coin up, Georgie, is a whole other kind of conversation. And I'll be honest with you, I think Simon will know more. Simon's looked into it. Simon knows how to do it.
Not technically, but regulatory-wise, can anyone do it?
I do not know technically how you do it, okay, no. Just to be clear. But the way you do these things technically is you find someone who's smarter than you who can do it. I'm the editor of a website. I have been the editor of This Is Money for 8 years. I've worked for This Is Money for 15 years. I couldn't build you a website either. I could spend hours using a website builder trying to build it, but it wouldn't work anywhere near as well as This Is Money. But I don't need to, because we've got people who are clever than me who build the website and so on. However, I mean, just to go back to those heady days of the last Bitcoin boom, which, you know, we're kind of sort of seeing again, but with maybe slightly less of the kind of madness around some of the little like setup coins. Ponzi coin. Introducing the Ponzi coin ICO, the world's first transparent decentralized Ponzi scheme built on the blockchain. That was literally how Ponzi coin described itself. Ponzi coin saw a load of people try to put money into Ponzi coin. The person who set up Ponzi coin eventually put a note up on the website that said, "Our incredible journey. We hope everybody had a good laugh, but we have to shut down. This was a parody art performance stroke joke. I did not run off with the money. I never sold any of my Ponzi coins, and the contract was drained from other users withdrawing. Please be careful when investing in shady cryptocurrencies, especially ones that look like pyramid schemes. It's a zero-sum game, and money doesn't appear out of thin air. I mean, someone literally set up something called Ponzi coin and said it was a pyramid scheme, and people still tried to put money into it. And the way it works is because like a pyramid scheme, you put your money in, and then if some other people come in below you, yours goes up, and you're like, might be a Ponzi coin, but I've made some money. And then the people below you, some people put some money in below them. And Lee mentioned momentum. Momentum is a genuine investing phenomenon. You know, momentum investing is a school of investing where you buy into stuff that is going up. It does not matter that you do not get in at the absolute bottom, and it does not matter that you do not get out at the absolute top. All you want to be doing is buying into something that's got momentum, making some gains, and then you get out. The problem with momentum investing is you must have a system of evaluating what you're putting your money into, and you must be hugely disciplined about the in and the out, because otherwise you end up losing money very, very easily. And the way that you lose money most easily is if you start combining it with something that lets you trade very easily and trade with borrowed money with leverage. So if you are using contracts for difference, if you are using spread betting, unless you are actually buying the asset itself, whether that's like genuine direct ownership or through like a traditional nominee account, as you do with when you're investing in shares or funds or trusts, or a lot of places now offer Bitcoin and like a nominee account, that's okay. You're buying that asset. But if you're using CFDs and spread betting and stuff like that, you can very easily lose more money than you put in. And there's a really big concern at the moment, particularly in the States, about some of this kind of what we've called the lockdown trader phenomenon, and we've talked about before, and the massive rise in option trading. Option trading is not necessarily in itself a bad thing. There's lots of people who use options for sensible reasons, but it gives you the opportunity to buy or sell a particular asset at a certain price in the future. But it's very much linked to that kind of like when you hear people talking about trading on margin, leverage, borrowed money, stuff like that. If you go back to the 1920s, the bucket shops, they were called in the boom then. You know, every small town in America had a selection of bucket shops, and people just went in and punted on some stocks. And, you know, the end result of that was not pretty. And that's why there's this concern about this huge rise in option trading in the US, because it's largely coming from small investors, not from large investors. It has the potential to seriously warp markets and share prices, but also to be very, very bad for your financial health. So avoid that, I think, would be my suggestion.
All right. I want to talk not just about investing in the currencies themselves, but there's also, I suppose, a suite of other things you can invest in related to it. And why I mention that is because of the crypto mining company Argo Blockchain. Simon, one of the most popular stocks of 2021. So you don't have to go straight for the currencies. You can go for the bits on the side, right?
There's a better way. There's any number of ways that you can pump your money on things. And if an old-fashioned AIM-listed mining stock with all the ups and downs and excitement of, you know, will it find diamonds or gold or will it strike oil, just is a bit too, you know, last decade for you and not quite high octane enough, you could go for a cryptocurrency mining stock instead. Argo Blockchain, basically its success and failures has pretty much mirrored that block of Bitcoin itself. It's a cryptocurrency miner. And most people probably wouldn't have heard of it, but I tell you when you will start hearing it and seeing it is when you look at the risers and fallers or the most bought companies and so on, and you start seeing it feature on there. And when people see that, and then they go, oh, look how much it's increased by. And then they go, oh, I'll have some of that. Then you start seeing it all going on. I mean, Interactive Investor said it was its most bought investment so far this year, up to the 18th of January. That's good going. It is for such a tiny company. And buys in the company increased 3,798% year on year over the same period. And it just coincides with the meteoric rise of Bitcoin. Buying a blockchain mining company and Bitcoin are pretty much poles apart, but very much similar. And what the company does is it operates a global data center, providing a low cost and consumer friendly service for the mining of leading cryptocurrencies. Any decentralized cryptocurrency powered by a proof of work algorithm can be mined. A few of the most popular coins to mine today are Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Zcash. Argo's cloud-based mining as a service platform is available to anyone, anywhere in the world, on a monthly subscription. What is crypto mining? It's the process of verifying blocks and transactions of a certain cryptocurrency and adding each new block to its network. Each block of transactions has a complex mathematical hash function associated with it that requires significant computing power to solve. Note the words significant computing power to solve. The miner who solves the function first receives the cryptocurrency as a reward for supporting the network and adding a new block to the blockchain. So basically, you're kind of buying into its ability to do this really complicated thing and mine cryptocurrencies. I would not be able to tell you whether Argo is a great long-term mm-hmm. investment, a great substitute for Bitcoin, whether you'd just be better off buying Bitcoin instead, or whether you'd be better off buying some other cryptocurrency mining stock, or anything else. I'm totally unqualified to comment on this because I do not know enough about how this whole process works. And that might be something that if you're considering investing in something like Argo, you might also want to consider. Do you have the faintest idea how this works and any idea of how you could put a value on Argo?
I think it's a way for people actually to get involved in cryptocurrency as part of their kind of like tax planning as well. So you could have it perhaps potentially as part of a SIP or an ISA, whereas a cryptocurrency, when you just buy it verbatim, obviously you don't have that ability. And I think that's, it's almost like a way of getting involved in cryptocurrencies that way. But that said, the price of Argo has gone from 107p at the start of the year. It was down to 90 odd p at the start of the week. It went down 17% when we had this story published on Monday, and that is now down to about 60p. So it's almost halved in the last sort of couple of weeks. And I think it will all be linked to the price of Bitcoin falling this week. Mm-hmm. So it does mirror what Bitcoin does so far, and whether that continues, well, that's anyone's guess.
All right, we'll leave this to one side. New year, same old problems for savers. Let's go there, shall we? Struggling to find an account to stash their cash that keeps up with the rising cost of living. Now, inflation has gone up to 0.6%. The number of those accounts available has dropped from 703 last month to just 288. That's according to Savings Champion. Just 8 interest-paying current accounts, 7 easy access deals, and 10 instant access tax-free ISAs currently pay at least 0.6%. Lee, this is not a surprise. We won't go over the whys and wherefores again of this one because we've done it before, but just what are the best rates out there at the moment? What can we expect? Where should we be looking?
Crikey, it's bleak, Georgie. I mean, it's bleaker than bleak.
That's why I don't like talking about it, Lee. It gets you so upset.
I know. Easy access rate, 0.5%. Best Buy, 0.5%. This time last year, it was 1.41%. Easy access. The whole market is just absolutely folded in on itself. And actually, that's probably why quite a lot of people are looking at things like cryptocurrencies and doing things elsewhere, because they're going, 0.5%. Crikey, that's just not worth the time of day, is it? And even fixed in now, Georgie, 1 year fixed, top rate, 0.65%, 2 year fixed, 0.82%. I can't believe I'm in a time where a 2 year fixed rate savings account pays less than 1% and it's a Best Buy rate. The best buy overall is a 5 year fixed, 1.5%. So basically, if you want to match what the Best Buy easy access rate was doing this time last year, you've got to fix away your money for 5 whole years. You can get 2% with Nationwide on its current account, but that requires opening a current account, and you can get 2% on a whole £1,000. So that is the maximum you can put into that account, which basically doesn't make it a worthwhile place for people to put their money for the majority. So, you know, Georgie, it's incredibly bleak out there. The other thing I would say, actually, is worth pointing this out today. Ennis Nye, the boss, has come out to MPs this morning and written a letter apologising. You know, we've had this chat about NSI quite a bit. They've had a massive customer service problem there because they made those moves last year. Do you remember those brutal cuts where some mm-hmm. savings rates dropped to 0.01% after people had piled in billions and billions of pounds during the pandemic because it was basically found itself at the top of the Best Buy table, and it shouldn't have been there. It should never be at the top of the Best Buy table. It should always be sort of mid-ranking. People just piled in tens of billions of pounds. And then what's happened is they made those brutal cuts. Lots of people have wanted to then get their money back out of it, either long-term savers, or people that have put money in over the pandemic, seen what the rates dropped to and gone, crikey, now I'm going to have to take my money back out. And it's completely made the customer service experience very, very testy in November and December. I've had lots of stories of people waiting a long time on the phone, lots of customer service problems there. Apparently, those customer service problems have got a bit better now. But if you are an NS&I customer trying to get hold of them, they're saying until the spring, this is still going to go ahead. And he defended the decision to make those drastic cuts. Yeah, I mean, we could go back and forth about this because they had cuts coming in May. They delayed them because of the pandemic. And then instead of making those same cuts, they made really, really deep, brutal cuts. And it just has not, in my opinion, been a great look for the Treasury back bank, in my opinion. So, yeah, there's the apology, Georgie. It's there. You can go and read it on our website this morning.
Thank you very much, Lee. I will do that afterwards. But first, thanks to coronavirus, I imagine have a lot of unoccupied buildings at the moment. Restrictions meaning people encouraged to work from home, stay at home, etc. And it costs money to protect property. Link all that to the lack of affordable homes to buy and to rent. And could one answer lie in guardianship? Now, this is not a new phenomenon. I know a couple of years ago we spoke about it on the show. Currently, around 10,000 people in Britain rent in places like police stations, hunting lodges and ex-hostels at a reduced price. Simon, tell us more about property guardianship. You know, how does it work? How can you get involved? Is it a good idea?
It is, if you're interested in that kind of thing. You provide living security for a vacant building, and that's in exchange for highly affordable accommodation, particularly in a central location. You know, if you think about how much it would cost you to rent a flat in a city centre or central London, for example, in particular, and you're there to stop other people busting in and doing bad things. You don't have to be a security guard. You don't have to be patrolling around every night with your torch and fending off invaders. Just the act of someone being there, the lights being on, someone knowing that there's someone there, means that people are not going to, you know, or are much less likely to break in, vandalize it, thieve things, try to set fire to it, do any other kind of menace, but also to protect it against the elements and you know, damage. You know, we've just had storms, haven't we? Think about the number of empty buildings that will have been damaged by the storms and nobody's going to realize for quite some time. And the longer that you leave it before you obviously fix that hole in the roof, that broken window, that other thing, the more damage is done to the property. What happens is as a property guardian, in return for having the accommodation, you say that, you know, you're going to live somewhere that isn't probably designed as residential accommodation. You know, you might be bunking down in an old office building or a
point.
Or
are there
warehouse
any minimum standards of safety, of cleanliness, of washing facilities that these companies, if they are doing this reciprocal agreement?
If you're dealing with a reputable property guardian organization or a company that is doing a reputable job of getting someone to stay and look after the building, then yes, I would imagine that there are probably going to be cases where people stay in empty buildings owned by people and it's done on a handshake and an agreement where they're living in somewhere that possibly isn't quite up to the standards that you would expect, doesn't pass health and safety, is a bit of a dump and might possibly be dangerous. But you know, such is life, I guess. So it depends on how you decide to approach this. If you do decide to approach this and want to make sure that everything is above board and top notch and that you're living somewhere safe and everything like that, then go through someone reputable and sign a license agreement, which is what you have to do, not a tenancy agreement, so you don't have exclusive rights to the property. The vacant property should then adhere to fire, health and safety regulations. So the vacant properties will have permission temporarily given to allow people to live in, because many of these properties would not have permission for people to live in there. But if you're dealing with someone who's just doing the whole thing kind of, you know, under the counter and everything like that, then you're taking the risks that involves. Generally speaking, you will end up paying some money. A license fee is probably like half or slightly more than half of the equivalent private sector rent in that location, but will often include bills and council tax. So by doing that, by agreeing to pay some rent, pay like half of the value, you're obviously then saying, well, I have these expectations that this will be above board and I will have these standards and everything. If you're just staying in someone's building for free on a handshake, then you may not do to go back to that. You know, so you could be paying as little as £300 a month. In London, property guardians could stay somewhere central for £400, £500 a month. It could cost them thousands of pounds to stay somewhere like that. You won't have all the comforts of a normal rented property. You will have a unique experience and you'll probably end up perhaps living with other people. It's a bit like a kind of commune, I guess, vibe. Yeah. I mean, Lee looks absolutely terrified at the thought of that. I don't know whether I want to live in a commune with random people. I could probably live in a commune with some of my mates, but I think we'd need to have our own separate buildings and separate spaces, and I'm maybe a little bit too old just for bunking up in an old office building with 10 of my mates.
Lee, we both of us had weird faces there. I can imagine that, you know, for some people this is the only answer in terms of places like living in London. Where are you going to? And then I'm thinking, well, actually, you can probably do a sort of spare room job for about £400. There's loads of room for risk. You know, Simon says, of course, if it's all above board, et cetera, but I'm sure you can't have the same rights as you would as a private tenant. I just think there's abuse in the system to be had here, Lee.
If you're actually interested in doing this, there is an association, the Property Guardian Providers Association, which will have all of that kind of guidance on there, and we'll have the reputable companies that provide this kind of service. And it's a nomadic lifestyle, Georgia, I would suggest. It's one of those things where, you know, you've got no long-term security. You might be in one building for a couple of months, another one for a year. You'll have all sorts of people coming and going, which, you know, potentially in a pandemic isn't the most, appealing thing to have going on. To be honest with you, sleeping in an abandoned police station in a cell, I mean, I may as well have just got arrested. A load of other people with probably an ice cold shower. I don't know what it's like around your guys' way, but there are so many police stations I drive past in Essex that have been closed down from all of the cuts, and they've all properly like boarded up with that silver metal kind of drilled in. And imagining if it's a Property Guardian place, that won't have happened because you must require light and things like that, which is just all things you consider. But I mean, with these like police stations that are abandoned here, they don't stay abandoned very long. They just get teared down and they're turned into flats. So again, it shows you how quickly these things can move. And we've got a case study actually in the story, Kevin, who's done this for sort of 7 years. He's in his 50s. So he's not some, you know, young whippersnapper who's got some glossy digital job in London doing this and sort of like hopping between warehouses. And if you've got any kind of glamorous assertions, you know, he's lived in a police station. He's lived in a Victorian hunting lodge, which I don't know if you watch horror films, but that just for me just sends the heebie-jeebies up me. I mean, a Victorian hunting lodge, pitch black, strangers. I don't know, this lifestyle for me, even in my kind of brash early 20s, I'm not sure I would have adopted it, if I'm being honest. But for some people it could be an option. It could, especially for places where rents are sky high, and £400, Georgie, in central London is not going to get you a room.
All right, well, we'll leave that to one side, because as the world, let's play a little game, as the world changes the English language, it has to adapt and keep up, and of course money's no different, and it's not shy to jargon, should we put it that way. There have been many new words and phrases coined for the finance world, well, since the turn of the century. I mean, there's loads of them. So this is when I asked a language expert to get a list of some of them. So it's a little bit of a fun thing at the end. I'm going to pick a few at random and challenge you guys to explain what they are. So no cheating, don't get it up, Simon.
I have deliberately not read this.
Excellent.
For this very reason, I deliberately did not read this article when it was published the other day, so that you could test me on these. They're like all like portmanteaus and things, aren't they, and stuff like that.
You know how my brain works, Simon. All right, yeah. I'm just going to pick some at random then, and you are going to have to explain what they are or what you think they are. Okay, Simon, you first. I'm going to pick at random, hunkvertising.
Hunkvertising. Ooh, hunkvertising. It sounds like a mysterious German billionaire, hunkvertising, who made his money in the first wave of the Bitcoin boom and has since become a sort of major kind of like talking head, like the Winklevoss guys
close,
or something.
Simon, yeah, close.
Hunkvertising, and that I think that's using a handsome, stripped to the waist, buff man to advertise your product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, Lee, you're next. Ant Hill Family. Ooh, Simon, you're right, by the way. That is right.
Is that something to do with sort of like children not being able to fly the nest and then paying rent or something like that?
I think I'll give that. It's the trend whereby children move back in with their parents so that they all work together towards group financial goals. Doorbuster, Simon.
Doorbuster. That is someone who comes to your door to try and sell you something and just will not go away.
No, I don't, I'm not going to give that to you. It's a product sold very cheaply in order to attract customers into a shop and make them buy other more expensive things. I thought was a loss leader.
Yeah, that's a loss leader.
Doorbuster sounds more exciting though, doesn't it?
All right, fair enough. This is done by, I would like to point out, an intelligent man, a former researcher on TV's QI language expert. So let's go with Doorbuster then. Lee, fair casting.
This has got to be where you try and book cheap flights, travel, and trying to get it on a right month or day.
Yeah, that'll do. Predicting the best date to buy a plane ticket, which at the moment is probably never. And final ones, Lee's in the lead, 2-1. Simon, jackpotting.
Jackpotting. Jackpotting, well, it's got to be something to do with prizes, hasn't it? Repeatedly pursuing big prizes in the belief that you will somehow get rich from them rather than actually doing any proper work.
No, it is hacking into a cash machine in order to obtain money.
Hold the bells.
Stealing, I think that's stealing. Cool.
Yeah, that's just common or garden theft, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, final one. Lee, you've won anyway. But let's go for stoozing.
Oh, that's easy.
How is that easy? I do think I've read this before, though. Is it something to do with a credit card?
It is. Yeah. But that's not enough. I need the answer.
I'm not going to explain this very well. You get a credit card at a sort of 0% rate, and then you put it somewhere else to try and make money on it, and then pay off the credit card at the end and have made some profit on what you've done. Does that make sense? Does that make sense at all?
You're right, but your explanation's not marvelous. It's borrowing money on a credit card with 0% interest rate, then investing the same money in a bank account that pays a high interest rate so that a profit can be made when the original loan is repaid.
Investing the money where? Where are you putting this money?
Yeah, it's a good point. In a bank account that pays a high interest rate.
Yeah, there were some other ones in there that might deserve mention. There was the Menno Porsche, which is middle-aged men attempting to recapture their lost youth by buying themselves an expensive sports car. Shop dropping. Leaving messages hidden in a shop, often in the pockets of a piece of clothing, to raise awareness of the ethical malpractices of the manufacturer or retailer. And then tech wreck. A collapse in the price of shares in high technology industries.
You've also gone to know your acronyms as well, which I rather like. Lee, what's a twag?
Oh, no idea. I don't want to get myself in trouble on the podcast.
I think twag's quite a funny one. The tech wife and girlfriend. The wife or girlfriend of an entrepreneur in the technology industry.
Come on, Lee. Read your OK magazine.
Well, actually, I did think wag, and then I couldn't think what the T would be, but that makes total sense.
So let's be fair, let's be gender fair here, because there are an awful lot of women who've made a ton of money in the tech industry. So it would be tech, husband, boyfriend, someone who wants to be a tahab, a tech husband and boyfriend.
Yeah, it doesn't work so well, does it? It doesn't work so well.
No, let's stop there. Because if anybody's still listening, let's stop there.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that's it for this week. We'll leave that there. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. If you have any comments or questions for the team, any acronyms you want to throw at us, or anything you'd like them to look into. Simon?
Yes, you can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. You can tweet us at thisismoney, and you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to comment on the podcasts, find all podcast paths, and we'll link to all the articles, including the list of daft financial terms that we've just been talking about.
Well, but listen, if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.